Hi, I'm Kristen.
And I'm her little brother, William.
We're from the podcast Guide to the Unknown, where we only talk about scary stuff and have a good time doing it.
Come join the scary fun, everyone.
Wherever you get your podcasts, you'll find Guide to the Unknown.
Hometown Ghost Stories contains serious and often distressing events and is not intended for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
This week on Hometown Ghost Stories, in part two of our coverage on Salem, Massachusetts, we dive into three more haunted locations within the historic city: the House of Seven Gables, the Hawthorne Hotel, and the ghost of Philip English. This is episode number 53 of Hometown Ghost Stories, The Ghosts of Salem, part two.
Marion stepped into the elevator of the Hawthorne Hotel with her husband Henry and pressed the button for the sixth floor. They were in town for just one evening to attend their granddaughter's wedding. The old elevator creaked its way up to the top floor. The doors opened to a carpeted hallway with green wainscoting and chandeliers hanging from the ceiling every 12 feet or so. It had an old feel to it, while still remaining classy. As they headed down the hall to room 614, a woman in a gown came around the corner on the other side of the hall, walking towards them. Marion smiled at her as they passed by each other, but the woman just kept looking ahead without acknowledging them. "Right here," Henry motioned to the door with a 614 on it. Marion unlocked the door and noticed the woman standing in front of the room next to them, 612. She wasn't attempting to enter the room, just standing there, staring at the closed door. Marion wondered if she had forgotten her key as she walked into her own room and closed the door behind her. After checking in, the couple went on with their day. They walked the town and visited the local shops before heading back to the hotel to get ready for the wedding. They once again ascended the old elevator to the sixth floor and walked down the hallway to their room. Marion felt a chill as she walked by the room where the woman had been standing earlier in the day, but the woman wasn't there this time. As they were getting ready for the wedding, Marion thought she heard a faint knock, possibly at her door. Henry didn't seem to notice, so Marion walked to the peephole to see. She peered through, but only saw the empty hallway. Suddenly, the woman from earlier walked right past their door, but this time, she wasn't looking ahead. She was looking right at Marion as she walked by the peephole. Marion jumped back, startled, and then opened the door and looked down the hallway. The strange woman was once again standing outside room 612, just staring at the door. Marion quickly closed the door, unsure as to why she felt so frightened. She chose not to say anything to Henry. When they left to go to the wedding that night, there was once again nobody outside the door. They got into the elevator, and Henry pressed the button for the lobby. Marion had an uneasy feeling as she waited for the doors to close. It seemed to be taking forever. Out of nowhere, at the far end of the hallway, the woman walked out from around the corner and began heading towards them. Marion clutched her purse in her hand and willed the doors to close. Finally, they began closing as the woman turned to stare at the door to room 612. Once in the lobby of the Hawthorne Hotel, Marion told Henry to wait by the door and headed over to the front desk.
I hate to bother you, but I think the woman in 612 might be missing her key, she explained to the woman at the desk.
The woman clicked away at her computer and then looked up at Marion.
There's nobody currently staying in that room, the woman replied.
A chill crept up Marion's spine as she stepped back away from the desk. She headed back over to her husband and grabbed him by the elbow.
The front desk just told me there's nobody staying in that room next to us, she said in a hushed tone.
So who is the woman? She added. Henry stopped and looked at her, confused.
What woman?
he asked. I'm Rob Coakley, and this is Hometown Ghost Stories, Salem, Massachusetts, Part 2.
The Hawthorne Hotel. The Hawthorne Hotel was built in 1925 and was named after the author Nathaniel Hawthorne, the great-grandson of John Hathorne, known for being one of the judges that oversaw the Salem witch trials. Nathaniel likely added the letter W to the name Hathorne to distance himself from the history tied to the executions. The city's Chamber of Commerce and Rotary Club held a drive to raise money for the completion of the hotel, with over 1,000 residents and businessmen investing in the project. On July 21, 1925, the hotel held a three-day celebration for its official opening. Many celebrities have stayed at the Hawthorne, including Johnny Cash, Bette Davis, Colin Powell, former President George Bush, Walter Cronkite, and even the entire cast from Bewitched, the 1970s sitcom, which also featured the hotel in an episode. Over time, the hotel has earned a reputation as one of the most haunted hotels in the country, believed to have been built on land formerly owned by the first accused witch to be executed during the Salem witch trials, Bridget Bishop. Her ghost is one of many that is said to walk these halls. Bridget's property included an apple orchard, which was the very location where the hotel now sits. Guests have reported the smell of apples in the hotel and even encountered the spirit of Bridget herself. But other hauntings at the hotel are not as pleasant as the scent of apples. Mysterious mists, disembodied voices, laughter, and the ghostly sounds of babies crying have been heard in areas where there are no children. People have been grabbed and tickled in the night, and poltergeist activity has been reported throughout the hotel, with the most extreme cases in the basement. In the downstairs library, formerly called the lower deck, there have been reports of tables unexplainably being stacked on top of each other and chairs being moved. On one occasion, an employee had set the room up for a banquet. He stepped out of the room for a moment, but when he returned, all of the chairs had been stacked up in a pyramid. The employee ran out of the basement and quit immediately. He never returned to the Hawthorne Hotel. On the third floor sits one of the most haunted rooms in the hotel. Due to the expansion of the hotel over time, room 325 has an unordinary layout. A bathroom divides two bedrooms included in 325. One night, a businessman checked in. The following morning, he went to the front desk demanding a new room. He told the clerk that it was absurd that he had to share a bathroom with the adjoining room. He was also furious that his neighbor was so noisy. He claimed that whoever this was went into the bathroom, turned on the lights, ran the water, flushed the toilet, and even turned on the TV in the other room. The staff informed him that the bathroom and the other bedroom was all part of room 325. He didn't believe them at first, until they walked with him back up to his room and showed him that not only were the rooms connected, but the beds were all made, the room was clean, and it was clear that nobody had been staying there. He was alone all night. Other guests of room 325 claim that they feel a presence at the end of their bed and claim that something touches their feet during the night. The sixth floor of the Hawthorne is the most haunted floor in the hotel. One evening, in room 628, a guest had placed his keys on the nightstand and left the room. When he returned, his keys were gone. Confused, he searched the entire room for his lost keys. To his amazement, after searching every corner of the room, the keys mysteriously reappeared right back where he had left them on the nightstand. There have also been reports of a ghostly apparition of a woman who wanders the entire sixth floor. Legend has it, she will stop at room 612, turn, and stand at the door. It's been reported that she will just stand there and stare at the door. When spotted, she seems to stand there for a moment before disappearing.
We need to pick up the pace if we're going to make it, Bruce said while looking back over his shoulder. Jennifer's walk turned into an almost slow run. She glanced over her right shoulder, wishing she had time to admire the ocean and the pier, but they wanted to get into the House of Seven Gables. Maybe tomorrow they could take their time, sit on one of the benches, hear the boats, and enjoy the scenery. But not now. Frantically, they rushed up to the house, and to their dismay, it was dark. A sign on the door read, "Sorry, closed for the rest of 1981, due to renovations." Bruce ran his fingers through his thick black hair and let out a sigh. Jennifer watched him reach in his denim jacket and grab a pack of cigarettes and a lighter. As he went to pull one out of the pack, his face lit up. "Hey, let's see if they left a door or window open," Bruce said as he started to walk around the house, putting the contents of his hands back in his pockets. "I don't think we should do that," Jennifer said with a tinge of nervousness, except she secretly hoped they could get in. What would be better than their own private tour of the house she grew up reading about? Bruce found a door and was able to push it open. They looked at each other, and even Jennifer couldn't help but smile. "Okay, let's not stay too long. We don't want to get arrested on vacation." They walked into the house, and it was like a time machine. The paintings, the furniture, the ceiling that was so low, Bruce would have to bend to walk if he were only a few inches taller. As they made their way through the first floor, they heard a noise from upstairs. They looked at each other, but continued through the house. The hidden staircase was one of the main things they wanted to see. After seeing a special on the house, they knew exactly where to look, and they headed to the dining room. After fumbling with the door a bit, they finally got it open. A rush of energy entered Jennifer's body as she began up the narrow stairs. Bruce was behind her with his lighter lit. Jennifer stopped and turned to give Bruce a kiss. As they embraced, they heard footsteps begin up the stairs just above them. They stopped and looked at each other, then ahead, and saw a shadow quickly dash out of sight, and the noises stopped. Somehow they were both intrigued, and instead of fleeing, walked up the stairs. When they arrived on the second floor, they looked around the poorly lit room. Nothing. Bruce moved to the next room and called out hello. He was met quickly with a shush in his left ear. "Not now, Jennifer," he said. But when he turned around, she was 10 feet away, and her jaw was nearly on the floor. "The woman, she was just there, then disappeared. We need to leave." They headed back towards the staircase. As they rushed down the stairs, they heard plates begin to smash back up on the second floor, and sounds of a woman groaning behind them. As they ran out the door and down the street, Jennifer took a look over her shoulder one last time and saw the woman staring out the second floor window, put a finger up to her nose, and then slowly disappear.
The House of Seven Gables, also known as the Turner Ingersoll House, was built in 1668. John Turner had the house built, and it would stay in his family for three generations. During the time the Turners owned the house, they would expand and remodel it several times. John Turner III would squander the family fortune and be forced to sell the house to cover his debts. The Ingersolls would acquire the house after the Turners, and it would yet again have substantial renovations and remodels. Nathaniel Hawthorne was a cousin of Susanna Ingersoll, and she would often entertain him at the house. Hawthorne was infatuated with the house, and it inspired him to write the book, The House of the Seven Gables. The book included the story of a cursed family of a judge from the witch trials, and even a couple of ghosts. The house now is a museum that you can go and tour, but what they probably won't include if you do is the actual ghost stories of the property. The attic is one of the more active locations within the house. A child playing and giggling has been heard coming from the attic, and when people go up to check, there is no one there. Footsteps and balls rolling have also been heard, and a little boy has been seen on occasion before vanishing into thin air. Some believe that it is Julian Hawthorne, the son of Nathaniel. However, the attic once doubled as the servants' quarters, and it is more likely that a child of one of the workers would be the ghostly presence. The hidden staircase in the house is one of the most memorable portions of the tour. Hidden in a dining room, a door can be opened to a tight, narrow staircase leading to the second floor. Some guests, though, have had a slightly more paranormal experience. A transparent man, or sometimes a shadow figure, has been seen dragging itself up and down the staircase. No one knows who this man is, but those that encounter him have reported a feeling of dread after seeing him. Susanna Ingersoll is the most recognized ghost that haunts the rooms and halls of the House of the Seven Gables. She's been seen in all parts of the house, walking up and down the hallways and lingering in the rooms of her former home. Others have seen her staring at them from a window while they stand outside the house. One guest, while visiting the house, was talking to his girlfriend in an upstairs room when she shushed him. When he turned to ask his girlfriend why she was shushing him, he noticed that she was on the other side of the room, and a ghostly woman was close by, giving him a stern look before she disappeared.
Heather was scheduled to work the closing shift, and the first thing she did when she arrived was check the schedule to see who she was closing with. She hated being alone in the shop because it gave her the creeps. The store speaker would always make weird noises that sounded like a man's voice, and things would always inexplicably fall to the floor in the basement as if they were thrown intentionally. The schedule said she was closing with Allie, the new girl. Heather was fine with it. She only met her once, but she seemed nice enough. Suddenly, a man's voice from behind her made her jump. "Hi, Heather." It was Tim, the store owner. He was carrying a stack of Harry Potter wands to a display in the front of the store. "Oh, hey, Tim, you scared me," she said. He apologized and continued to the storefront. "I'm heading out for the night. Don't forget to lock up when you leave," he called over his shoulder as he headed out the door. Allie walked in as he was leaving. Heather opened her mouth to say hello, but was cut off by a loud groaning sound emanating from the speaker above. Both girls just stared blankly until it stopped. Allie laughed, but Heather didn't. She was annoyed by Allie's amusement. "You know this building is haunted, right?" Heather remarked sharply. Allie rolled her eyes. "You mean the storefront gift shop that wasn't even built all that long ago? Yeah, okay." Heather found herself growing irrationally angry. So much for liking the new girl. "It's haunted by the ghost of Philip English," she said, as if it were obvious. "That's whose voice you hear coming from the speaker," she added. Allie didn't hesitate. "He's buried under the church around the corner," she retorted proudly, apparently impressed with herself for knowing that fact. Heather was quick to respond. "Yeah, but his mansion used to stand right here before the strip mall was built, right under your feet," she said with a smirk. Allie wasn't smiling anymore. The tension was palpable, and Heather started to feel bad for getting so angry about something so dumb. She was thinking of something to say to break the tension when the speaker started crackling. Then, just as clear as they were talking to each other, a man's voice came through.
"I see you. I watch you."
Allie let out a reactionary shriek and quickly clapped her hand over her mouth. Heather was too scared for "I told you so's" and just stood there, shocked. "Should we call Tim?" Allie asked. Heather didn't respond to her question, just purposefully walked over to the panel on the wall that controlled the PA speakers and promptly shut them off. An hour or so went by with no strange occurrences, until the lights dimmed, causing both girls to exchange a nervous glance. Suddenly, they heard a crash in the basement. Reluctantly, Heather got up and walked to the basement door. Allie curiously followed a few paces behind her. They descended the stairs and turned on a light. A box of Harry Potter mugs lay smashed on the floor. Chunks of ceramic were scattered about. "Maybe it fell?" Allie suggested with a lack of confidence. "That box was stacked on the other side of the basement," Heather replied. Just then, a broom leaning against the wall in the corner fell over and skidded across the floor towards the girls. They screamed and ran up the stairs as the voice from the speakers that were supposed to be turned off barked,
"I see you. I watch you."
Philip English was the richest merchant in Salem, partly due to his extensive international contacts. He owned 14 lots, a wharf, 20 ships, and a mansion with a waterfront view. In March of 1692, he became a Salem town selectman, leaving a sour taste in the mouth of the Putnam family of Salem Village, who also desired that political seat. A month later, Philip's wife would be arrested for accusations of witchcraft based on the testimony of Ann Putnam Jr., among others. Philip got word of the accusation and fled to Boston to avoid capture, but realized that his absence was detrimental to his wife's defense. He turned himself in, but due to his wealthy connections, was able to have himself, along with his wife, transferred to a prison in Boston, where they received special treatment. The couple were allowed to rent rooms in the house of the jailkeeper and attend church on Sundays. They used the loose restrictions to their advantage and plotted an escape to New York, which they successfully made in August. Philip and Mary remained in New York for the duration of the trials. Charges were brought against them back in Salem while they were in New York, but they remained there until May 1693, when Governor Phipps disbanded the court associated with the witch trials after his own wife was accused of witchcraft. Philip and Mary were free to return to Salem, but they'd soon learn things were far from well and good. Despite the charges of witchcraft being dropped, English learned that 14 of his properties, his wharf, and ships had all been confiscated by Sheriff George Corwin, and his own neighbors had looted his house on Essex Street. English battled Corwin in court for 3 years trying to reclaim his property, but was unsuccessful. However, his chance to settle the matter out of court would come in 1696 when Sheriff Corwin would die of a heart attack at the young age of 30. As a horse-drawn carriage brought the sheriff's body to the cemetery on Broad Street, English put together a posse and ambushed the procession. English stole the body of George Corwin and told the Corwin family he'd give the body back once his property was returned to him. He maintained possession of the sheriff's body for several days until the family paid him what they could. English returned the body to the family and slowly rebuilt his shipping business. In 1733, Philip English donated a plot of land to a local church so they could build a chapel and burying ground. He was buried in that very ground when he died 3 years later. In the mid-1800s, the small wooden church was torn down and a large stone structure known as St. Peter's Episcopal Church was built in its place, which still stands to this day. When the building was expanded, the original grave markers were moved to the front of the new building, but the bodies of the dead, including that of Philip English, still lie beneath the building. Due to the disturbed resting area of many of the people who were buried in the church's old burying grounds, the St. Peter's Episcopal Church is said to be one of the most haunted buildings in Salem. Many apparitions have been spotted in the sanctuary. Philip English's ghost has been seen walking through the church pews during services, and apparitions have been seen in the bell tower and parking lot as well. Loud disembodied footsteps have been heard, accompanied by loud knocks throughout the church. Some have even reported disembodied voices and whispers echoing throughout the old stone building. The ghost of Philip English has also been spotted in other places throughout Salem, many of which were places where his former properties once stood. His mansion on Essex Street, where a private residence now stands, is said to be haunted, as well as a toy store further down the street, where another of his properties once stood. Employees have reported poltergeist activity in the basement of the store, as well as a man's voice coming through the speakers saying, "I see you. I watch you."
What's going on, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome into Hometown Ghost Stories, episode number 53, which is Salem, and we're doing part two of Salem. So welcome back in. I'm Jesse Wilkins. I'm joined by Rob Coakley. Hello, Rob.
So I have an idea for next year. We should volunteer to decorate the House of Seven Gables, and this is for charity, so you guys can't say no. We dismember Dave into seven parts and put one part on each of the gables.
That's creative, and I like that. We're also joined by Dave. Welcome in, Dave.
I'm going to call the police. I've had enough.
I want to welcome in everyone who's hanging out in live chat. We got a lot of people here today. It's a good crowd. Anyone from Facebook probably isn't watching now. The Facebook stream seems to be down, so we apologize to our usual Facebook viewers. Hopefully you've made it over to YouTube or Twitch where we are hanging out. So big shout out to Earphil, who's here for the first time, I believe, in the live stream. And Jessica, the Stephanies are here. Matthew is here. Papa Squatch, L, just the letter L. Maggie Putnam, the great, 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 great granddaughter of possibly Ann Putnam. Yeah, sure. Maybe. Who knows? Casher's here. Matt Thomas. Kate is here. Captain McSlugs, who gave us our first donation on YouTube. I didn't even know we had this enabled, but he donated 99 cents. So Captain McSlugs, thank you for that donation. I didn't even know that was possible. And he also refuses to stop giving us money. He's also donating on the TikTok stream that we had going on earlier. So welcome in, everybody. I also want to welcome in John, Tina, and Jackson. What's up, buddy? And Roy Brady. Welcome in, my friend. Yeah. Demon King is here. Demon. My goodness. We go all day here.
Hello to everybody.
Hello to everybody that's hanging out in live chat. If you guys want to join in and get thanked relentlessly for the first 7 minutes of the show, like I just did.
We will aggressively thank you for the entire show and then not talk about ghosts.
Yeah. You could join in as well every Tuesday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on YouTube. It's usually Facebook and Twitch, but yeah. Salem Part 2. We kick this one off with the Hawthorne Hotel. Some ghost stories there. And some of the hauntings as well. Is that where you guys want to start here?
Sounds good to me.
So we have been to the Hawthorne several times. I think I've stayed there like 3 or 4 times now. Hawthorne, it's a cool hotel. It is old. Hometown thanks stories, yes. It is an old hotel built in the 1920s, as we talked about. And it's supposed to be one of the most haunted hotels in the country. Pretty much all lists of haunted hotels put the Hawthorne somewhere on there. So it does make those lists, which, I mean, we joke about it pretty much all the time with these lists where every location that we cover seems to end up at the top of one of these lists, at least. So that's the Hawthorne. We've investigated the Hawthorne a couple times. Usually, I mean, we do a little bit more partying than business when we go to Salem. So usually by the time we get back to the hotel, we're not very productive, but we have investigated. We haven't really caught anything there. We'll dive into that a little bit in the future here, but according to the staff, it's very haunted and they have their own stories. They've had people quit. They've heard the stories from guests that have stayed there, particularly the 3rd and the 6th floor seem to be the most haunted, mostly the 6th floor. Andrew says the ghost of Jesse's phone haunts it. That's an inside joke of when we went to Salem by, I was assaulted by Andrew, Captain McSlugs, and my phone smashed. Lost all my Salem footage.
Really smashed. The smashedest I've ever seen a phone. The screen had like a wave in it.
No, it had the shape of my AirPods in it because I landed on the phone. And, yeah, it was an ugly end to a fun night.
The greatest part of that entire thing is right afterwards, Andrew comes up to me and he just looks at me and he goes, Jesse just really wants to fight you right now. I'm like, I didn't even do anything. I'm like, why? What do you mean Jesse wants to fight me?
I don't know where that came from, but no, I did not want to fight Rob. But maybe, I don't know. It was this was all Rob's fault.
This was not my fault. I didn't do anything. Rob's fault.
Rob decided to celebrate by forcing us to take a million pickleback shots, which is
there was no
a shot of whiskey followed by a shot of pickle juice, which Catherine was really excited about because she really likes pickle juice. And it was a few too many, and it got to be a weird night in Salem. Lots of weird nights in Salem, though, but great, great time nonetheless. And we stayed at the Hawthorne that night. But long story short, we didn't get much in terms of an investigation that night. But we had previously investigated the Hawthorne, actually on multiple occasions. And there's still some footage left over from that investigation. I meant to actually tie some of it in because I actually found some of it. But we just didn't really get anything. So, you know, these are the locations. I mean, a lot of times when you do paranormal investigations, you're not going to get anything. So. Mm-hmm.
That's when we do investigate it. We're not there for a long enough period of time to actually accumulate any tangible evidence. Do you say right. Like I think it's Ed Warren who says you got 28 days is what he say there they are. Find a way to fit the Warrens in, but he says you got to be 28 days before you really find anything, which isn't always true. We found stuff. at different places.
We have, yeah, some locations you go there and you happen to be there on a night where it's very active and you can. But yeah, I think obviously the longer that you spend at a location, if you're able to spend 28 days at a location, or if you live in a haunted house, obviously over time you're going to catch more stuff. It's just the way these investigations go. But sometimes they, you know, sometimes you come in on a good night and it's just more active.
You could go to the most haunted location on the planet, right? Where stuff happens like almost nonstop, and you could still catch it on an off night. Like it's just, you know, you're not, nothing's guaranteed in the paranormal field. You're not guaranteed to capture something when you go investigate a place. Like you want to, I mean, you're looking for it, but it doesn't mean it's going to happen. So that's you got to keep that in mind, like that you're not always going to capture something when you go to these locations.
Right. So, I mean, we could dive into it. So,
so I guess pretty cool about this
one. We didn't catch anything. Go ahead.
It's haunted by apples, which is pretty unique. I don't think we've ever investigated a location that was haunted by apples before, but this one is.
We're going to investigate your microphone at some point too.
Dave's connection is once again shaky, just to start off the show too. Took all the precautions to make sure that his connection wasn't crap today, but that's all right. I'm sure it'll work itself out like it usually does. But the apples is kind of a new one. I mean, you get the scents, like the scent kind of hauntings before, typically with like cigar smoke or violet or lemon, lavender. So you get those kind of hauntings a lot of times. So the apple one is significant. Obviously, it's believed that it could have been built on the former site of Bridget Bishop's apple orchard. And that's why they think that sometimes you smell the scent of apples. Now, this is a it's a hotel that has a restaurant, and it's an active restaurant. According to the hotel manager and the restaurant, they don't have anything on the menu that has apples, apparently. This was according to a video from a few years ago. I don't know if they've updated their menu and now they do or whatever. But according to them, they're like, we don't even cook with apples. So if you smell apples, we don't know where that's coming from, which kind of makes a little bit more credible because, you know, if they don't have apples, then you're not smelling it from the kitchen. But who's to say that some kid didn't spill some apple juice or something? It's a little bit tricky to directly equate that to a haunting, but it's something. And it does tie it back to the history of the location.
I bet it's all these jerks that go apple picking relentlessly in the fall, and they just come and they hide some apples in the hotel. Just nonstop apple picking in New England and in the fall.
There is a lot of apple picking.
It's the worst. Like who goes apple picking? You psychos.
Most. I go apple picking sometimes, yeah.
Yeah,
or Bill Belichick goes apple picking. Okay, Matthew Thomas says, if you're drunk and investigate, do you think the ghosts get mad that they can't scare you? Could be that, or it could be you don't even, your senses are not fine-tuned at that point. I mean, you don't, there might be stuff going on that you don't even notice. Al says, I agree with Papa Squatch, just coordinate your visits with the ghost beforehand. Just make an appointment. Listen, we're gonna make an appointment. We're gonna need you to be pretty active tonight. That would be good.
Are you taking reservations?
What time's good for the haunt? Can you just elaborate on that? We definitely need that for Salem. Salem seems like for us personally, every time we go, we're celebrating something. So like we were celebrating our signing with Bloody Disgusting when we went last time, or we're celebrating Jesse trying to do the worst proposal of all time.
Would have been the worst.
Would have been the worst.
So I love Salem so much that when I was going to propose to the wife, I was like, oh, I should do it in Salem. And obviously we had a few drinks. And then by the end of the night, I'm out at the parking lot. I'm like, oh, I almost forgot. So I go to the trunk and I grab the wedding ring out of the trunk. And I don't remember. Was it Rob? Was it you that stopped me?
No, it was Dave.
It was Dave. Rob, I think, was taking a piss 5 feet away. And Dave's like, no, this ain't it. in theory, it was probably the right decision.
You should have
not do that.
It would have been great.
Not at that moment with Dave pissing. So,
I was not pissing.
Anyways, so you get the apple haunting. So there's a, on the third floor, there's, was it room 325, I believe, that's supposed to be haunted. There's been a lot of people that report stuff happening in that room between being touched. They say that your feet can get tickled. There was the guy with the keys story.
I think you threw that in so that, like, next time we go to Salem, you can just, like, come and start tickling us and be like, it was the ghost that did it.
So ghost hunters went and investigated the Hawthorne Hotel. I'm sure other ghost paranormal groups have done it as well. They debunked a lot of this stuff, or at least gave an explanation for a lot of this stuff. And in that particular room, at the foot of the bed is the air vent. And they think, you know, if you're asleep and all of a sudden the air vent, you know, the air conditioning kicks on or whatever, that air blowing through could feel like maybe something's tickling your feet. So it's a bit of a weird one anyways, but what a silly ghost. What a creepy, silly thing to do if you are a ghost. Just tickling my toesies. Yeah. I don't know. We should never do that again. Not at the same time. One at a time, maybe we can handle that, but...
I can't wait to screen grab that moment and put it on TikTok without context.
That was by far the scariest moment we've had on this show. It says a lot. Absolutely terrifying. So there's that one. And then on the sixth floor is a lot creepier to me. Like the third floor, there's some things that happen, but Bubba Squatch says the ghost of the old man from Family Guy. So the sixth floor is the woman who is wandering the halls. And this one is particularly creepy. Mm-hmm. So she wanders the halls, but then she stops right at room 612 and doesn't go in. And she just stands there. And that's like that story gave me chills when I heard it. I was like, that's a creepy one. I don't know. Just a ghost like standing there staring at a door. And if you happen to look through the people and see a woman standing there, that would be terrifying, even if it's not a ghost, just anyone just standing right there in front of your door.
Especially if it's a ghost.
But this also is kind of what happened to you. Like, you had this like situation where you woke up and not in the hall, but in your room.
True.
Where the woman was like standing over your bed.
Right. It wasn't at the foot of my bed, it was like right next to the bed, just standing. It was one of the ghost settings I had, and it was at a weird place that wasn't haunted. It wasn't at my house, which I'm pretty sure is haunted. It wasn't at my previous house, which probably was haunted as well. I have this thing where every house I've lived in is right next to or across the street from a graveyard. I'm always just living in a graveyard.
Yep.
But that was when I was living in a condo with our friend Nick and
me.
There's no reason for that place to be haunted. Maybe something had followed me home. I mean, this is when we were, you were living in Bridgewater. Well, you obviously lived there as well, but we had bounced back and forth between the Bridgewater house. I mean, we had visited haunted locations. So, I mean, maybe something attached itself to me. I don't know. I don't know what that was, but that was the most horrifying sighting I've ever had.
Do you remember? I don't know. Have we told this story on the show before? Do you remember?
I feel like we did.
So basically we lived in this condo, like Jesse said, nothing haunted had ever happened in this house. And me and Jesse had to go somewhere the next morning. And I don't really remember where we had to go, but we both got up. We didn't speak to each other. We got ready. We got in one of our cars. I don't remember whose. One of us was driving. And we didn't talk for like 10 minutes. And then we both looked at each other and we were like, I got to tell you about something that happened last night. And then the other one was like, me too. And you told that story. And I felt somebody sit on my bed the night before. Like, I literally felt someone sit on my bed and like, the entire impression happened, and then nothing else ever happened in this house again.
It was a weird night. Yeah, it was very strange. So I had woken up in the morning, and I thought maybe, I don't know if we were engaged at the time, but the girlfriend or wife or fiance or whatever had just shown up and just standing like inches away from me, just right next to me on the left side of the bed. And I look up and I was like, oh shit, like, what are you doing here? And then I look back and literally no one's there. And I was like, what the hell did I just see? And that was the most horrifying, quote unquote, ghost sighting that I've ever seen. I don't know what it could have been. Maybe my eyes were adjusting, or maybe I was still half dreaming. But all I know is it wasn't like just a shadow. It was like a person standing there. I couldn't see any like facial features, but it was definitely a woman. You could see the hair. And I don't know. It was absolutely terrifying.
You know what I hope happens in that condo for a residual haunting 100 years from now? I hope the ghost of our friend Rob just shows up in the banana suit, or was it the hot dog suit?
And I'll just rub him.
Yeah. When he put on the suit without any other clothing, and our friend is this guy Rob is like really jacked, and he was walking around our apartment in just this hot dog suit, just chugging milk. And I just really hope that
the funniest part of that story is that Nick's mother happened to be by the condo that day and she didn't say a word. She just looked at him. It was like 5 a.m. or something. It was a very strange time for him to be doing this. Anyways, that is a completely irrelevant story to Salem and Ghost.
He just walked up to her and started chugging milk, gave her complete eye contact, and then walked back down into the basement.
It's the most Rob Payne thing to do.
He just goes, okay. It's one of my favorite stories of all time.
Covering a lot of ground here.
Yeah,
we are.
We're telling haunting stories, but we can do that. This is a celebration. This is our 1 year anniversary.
This is our Halloween episode.
Yeah, it's the Halloween episode as well. Technically,
it is. So I think before we get away from the Hawthorne,
let's finish it up.
The most compelling part, and everyone's like, the sixth floor is the most haunted floor. This is where the most ghost sightings happen. But if the stories from the basement are true, then you have legitimate, strong poltergeist activity inside this hotel to a point where it's moving chairs and tables around. And obviously the most compelling one is the fact that it stacked all of the chairs up in a pyramid. And the employee who just set up the whole room for a banquet was just like, ah, fuck it, I'm out, I quit. He just left. He's like, I'm not dealing with this shit. I just set this whole room up and now I leave for 2 seconds. I come back and some ghost just stacked all of these chairs up in a pyramid. It's crazy. So if that's legitimate, if that's a real story, which the hotel staff swears by it, if that's a real story, then this hotel is legitimately haunted by a very powerful poltergeist or something. So
Captain McSlug says maybe it's a pyramid scream, which is pretty excellent.
That's a good one.
No, but that is terrifying. Like, and I would quit too. Not just because I was scared, but because like, I'm not doing this again. I literally just did this entire job and this asshole ghost comes in and just ruins everything I did. No, thanks. I'm out of here.
Yeah. So from our own experiences at the hotel, we got nothing. Ghost Hunters did their entire episode and they got absolutely nothing. And, you know, they reported back and the hotel staff was obviously pretty disappointed to hear the results, but they got absolutely nothing in this hotel. So what we're leaning on here is just the stories from guests that have stayed there and from people that have worked there. And obviously I find employees' stories a little bit more reputable than any of the other ones. So I would lean towards, yes, this place is haunted if those stories are true. Mm-hmm. But when you have professionals like Ghost Hunters go in there and they find nothing, when you have top of the line professionals like us go in there and find nothing.
Yeah. I mean, the best of the business, of course.
For sure. So if the basement stories are true, then yeah, I think that this hotel does earn a spot on the most haunted list. Obviously, if you're in Salem as well, this whole place is the whole town has a ton of history and it's a very haunted town.
I wonder if the time of year matters for the hotel too. And I say that in the sense that if you go to Salem in October, it is insanity. There is people elbow to elbow walking down the streets right around the Hawthorne. So is there a lot of energy that's like in the area at that point and makes it more active, or would it be more active when it's quieter? You know what I mean? So I think we need to
probably easier to notice stuff when it's quieter. Brodad brings up room 612 would be 666. Maybe. Fun fact from
that
Stephanie.
That was a Scott Stein Stephanie, math promo.
Was that? Yeah, it was. Sydney's birth weight was 6.66 pounds. Look at this. It's all starting to come together.
You left out the fact that she's my number one fan, and I don't appreciate that.
Well, she's your only fan, so that by default makes her your number one fan.
It doesn't matter. It was still
it was still accurate. I left out.
Yeah, still accurate. Yeah, so I think we should go back. We should actually try to investigate it both times. Like, we should do it in October, which is going to be tough because I think to book a room at the Hawthorne in October is like $8 million a night.
And you got to do it like a year ahead of time.
Probably right.
More than that at this point.
So we'll have to do it now.
Yeah, and we should do it in like February when no one's in Salem. That's
probably the way to do it. I want to go back to Airfield's comment because he said, do you think that those ghosts are really demons? I believe it's, bring up the Warrens again, was it Ed Warren that said that all ghosts are demons?
Yeah. I don't
know. That's not subscribe. What Edward said.
Well, tell us, Dave. You have his memoir
tattooed on your back. Get in front of the mirror and read that.
I did tell you it's not his. That's not his theory.
Thanks for elaborating.
What do you want me to say? You said it. I think it's Ed Warren that said that. I said no, it's not. It was just.
Oh, you know who that was? Actually, that was a priest from the church that I would like to say I go to, but I work every Sunday morning, so I haven't been to church in a long time. I'm a terrible Christian, but my wife and mother-in-law and kids, they all go to this church. It was actually a priest from that church who does exorcisms and things of that nature, and he had actually brought up that when he was coming by our house to cleanse our house of whatever was haunting it, which yeah, so that's a whole story, but he had said that. Forgive me for equating him to Ed Warren. I apologize, Father.
It was a common belief, whether it's the Catholic Church or any church, that's basically any deity that is not from the Bible or biblical is a demon. So they just basically demonize everything that isn't holy.
Fair. So that's the Hawthorne. If you go to Salem, it's like one of the very few hotels you can stay in Salem. There's not many lodging accommodations other than that and like another hotel or two and an Airbnb.
Yeah, it's tough. Yeah. As we said last episode, if you're looking to book a place to stay in Salem, you want to do it a good year in advance. Might be even longer than that with how crazy Salem got, particularly this year.
I guess I want to touch on this comment because Matthew says that Dave would read the book, but he's sitting on it so the camera can see him, which is
not bad.
Well done.
Not
bad. Well done. I've heard them all, but sometimes I get a good one tossed around.
Yeah,
that was a good one.
So is that kind of it on the Hawthorne?
Do we I think that's pretty much it. Yeah, I would like to
move on,
accumulate more evidence myself if I'm going to determine whether or not I actually think that this place is as haunted as everyone says it is. But just off what the staff has said alone, that's enough to say, yeah, it's more than likely a haunted hotel.
Yeah, next time more investigation, less pickleback shots.
That's a good start.
That's the game plan.
Get the business plan laid out for us.
So like going directly into something that sort of ties into the Hawthorne Hotel is the House of Seven Gables, which is for a town that relies on, you know, Halloween as like its big get, the witch trials, like hauntings. The House of Seven Gables is not open about talking about the hauntings there. They do not like associating them with the house. They do not want that as a selling point for this location at all. So I recently went there. I went there about a month and a half ago to get some footage as we knew we were doing this episode. I took the tour again. I've taken that tour a few times. And before we get into it, if you go to Salem, I think one of the things you should do is go to the House of Seven Gables. It's not really related to anything in the hauntings or, well, on the tour. They won't tell you about it. But it gives you a real sense of what life was like in Salem. It's in the time. And it's a good tour. It's really historic. It's really well done. That being said, they do not lean into the hauntings at all. And as I was doing this tour and it ended, I talked to our tour guide and I said, off to the side without anyone else around, I go, all right, great tour. You did a great job. Is the place haunted? And he immediately was like, I haven't, like, he really didn't want to have the conversation. You could tell, like, he didn't want to have the haunting conversation. What he did tell me, though, is you don't tour it, but you can do like a self-guided tour. The Nathaniel Hawthorne's birth house has been moved to the property. So you can actually go through the house Nathaniel Hawthorne was born in. And he said that house there, the staff have had some paranormal experiences in. Hearing voices, footsteps, doors locking on their own. But he wouldn't say anything about the House of Seven Gables.
I was listening to a podcast from a psychic medium who was recapping some of her visits to Salem. And she sounded like a really well-established, well-put-together lady. And she didn't sound like a loony kind of psychic or anything like that. Like, she sounded very grounded and reasonable. And she had said that out of all the places in Salem, the House of Seven Gables was what she was picking up on as one of the most haunted places that they visited. And she said, particularly upstairs, like as soon as you walk in, she was like, it just, it hits you this different kind of energy. But upstairs in particular, she was like horrified. It was just something terrible was there. So take that for what it's worth.
Yeah. And it's a house with a lot of history, right? It's one of the oldest houses that still survives in Salem. There's history of several different families that stayed there. The Turners and the Ingersolls. I mean, the house is named the Turner Ingersoll House, basically. You had Nathaniel Hawthorne that came by. He wrote the book, The House of Seven Gables, based on this book. And he was constantly just trying to atone for his family's part in the witch trials. Like you said in the episode, he adds the H to his name to the W in his name to be not fully associated with his, was his great grandfather or something like that.
Yeah,
that was the judge in the witch trials. This entire book, it centers around a judge from the witch trials and why, and the house being cursed because of that. He wrote the Scarlet Letter, which has to do with the witch trials, which in the opening of that, he apologizes for his family's part in that. This guy really like felt bad about what his family did and was trying to atone. And he goes to this house and he writes this whole book about ghosts and the witch trials. And now his birth house is there. And there's a lot going on at this place.
Do they think Nathaniel Hawthorne himself haunts either of those, these locations?
I haven't seen that he himself has. I touched on it in the pre-recorded part that they believe his, some people believe his son Julian is the child that haunts the attic, but it kind of doesn't make sense. Like his son, he wasn't really going to the house by the time he had children, right? So it's not like his kids were playing there often. And that attic did serve as the servants' quarters where families that worked in the house would also have their children there. And that would make a lot more sense that a child of one of the servants would be the, would be the ghost that haunts
them. It makes sense. So, I mean, if you hear kids and laughter, smaller footsteps or lighter sounding footsteps, then it's easy to equate that there could be a ghost child haunting this location. There's so many of these hauntings where it's like, oh, well, it's the ghost of this person. And I just say, like, what defining characteristic leads you to believe that it's that person in particular? Mm-hmm. So I believe that it could be Nathaniel Hawthorne's child, but it also is probably more likely, would you say, the servant's child or whatever?
Yeah.
So you just kind of point to where the evidence goes or who, you know, could be anyone. But
the flip side of that is Susanna Ingersoll, who has been seen. We know what her picture looks like. She's one of the most closely associated people with the house. So that's why it makes sense that the woman they see going around the house would be Susanna Ingersoll. Lived there her whole life, right? So like that one makes more sense as to why you are identifying her as the spirit.
Right, it does. So
recognizing somebody as the ghost would be one way to say, oh, that's who that ghost is. Another thing would be like if you have a residual haunting where somebody was doing something, like one particular thing a lot, and then now their ghost repeats that activity, you know. So if a ghost is doing something that person used to do all the time, I think that's another way you could identify that ghost as being to that particular person.
Right.
So Ricardo missed most of the live show. Welcome in, Ricardo. And he asked if we mentioned pirates yet. We have not, but
now we have.
Now we have. And this is, I mean, it's a city right on the water, so could be possible.
They have a pirate museum.
They do have a pirate museum.
They do. You know what that calls for.
Yeah.
There we are. Hey, we did it.
So obviously, if you're listening and not watching, you're missing out on all the cool graphics that we do.
They're amazing. You should see them.
We're on a limited budget here, okay?
Wasn't taking shots at you.
Subscribe on Patreon if you want some higher budget podcasts.
We'll get a couple more Patreon members and we'll upgrade to 3D pirate hats. Yes. Enough and we'll make an entire pirate movie.
Our entire budget is going directly into pirate hat effects. Nothing else in the works for you folks.
Eventually October's been long. We're going to have them just lower down on our heads instead of like actually being graphics at some point.
Oh, it's going to be good. Yeah. We're just going to hire pirates to stand behind us while we do our show. We'll turn around and high five them every once in a while. Let you guys know what we spent your money on.
Enough Patreon members. We will hire Johnny Depp to be Captain Jack Sparrow.
I heard he's looking for work these days.
That's true. So the House of Seven Gables is a must-visit spot if you go to Salem. And it is haunted, but they will not tell you about the hauntings, just to summarize this place.
I do like that you took the tour guide like aside and like, listen.
Yeah.
Tell me about ghosts. Me, I walk into the Rough Point Mansion. I'm like, who did this bitch kill?
Give me all the ghost stories now.
How many people did she slay in this exact house? Yeah, not the approach. So go ahead, take the Rob approach, not the Jesse approach. And
the staircase. We have to hit on the staircase real quick, because that is actually one of the creepier stories where I don't know if you guys noticed from the footage that I took, but that staircase is like real, real thin. It is not easy to get up and down for anyone of any. Dave would even have trouble doing this staircase. It's really a tough one. But to see like a shadow figure like crawling up the staircase as you head up would be, that's like absolute nightmare fuel, right?
Yeah, like it's not horrifying enough to spot a ghost or a shadow figure or something in a house, but there's something extra terrifying about one that's crawling on the floor, or there was one at one of the asylums that we covered that was crawling on the ceiling. Particularly crazy, the crawling effect. I don't know why that makes it more scary. Like, it should be scary enough when you see a ghost, never mind a crawling ghost.
Well, especially when you're in that much of a confined space, because you can only go up or down on these stairs. You are like this confined as you're walking, and to see something, because you're not able to like run away. You're like shimmying your way down the staircase, like, oh my God. And it's like so hard to get away from.
It looked like a very narrow staircase.
Yeah, everything. That's what I'm saying. Like, it is not easy to transcend this staircase. You're waddling like a penguin.
Dave waddles like a penguin anyways. All right. So that's the House of Seven Gables. I've been there, I think, just once. Mm-hmm. And it's a really beautifully maintained place. Like, the whole garden and everything. Like, the house is very cool. And Seven Gables sounds so creepy. I'm like, oh, what is it? Seven goblins there. And then I realized Gables is just like points on the house. But points seven's a lot for a house of that time, right?
There's actually eight too, but the way that they say that it's still seven is one of them's below the roof line. So they're like, oh, that one doesn't count because it's below the roof line. I'm like, all right. Like, semantics, I guess, at that point.
Seven Gables is a lot for most houses. Most houses have two.
All right, here we go with the Gable expert, Dave.
Andrew asks, is that one of the servant staircases?
Yeah, so that's the hidden staircase. You go into the dining room, and basically they open like a closet where they would keep some of the dishes and stuff. And then behind that, you can open that wall. And if you do it from the top of that, it goes into this room with a fireplace, and there's like a button within the fireplace to open the doorway to the staircase.
That sounds too high tech. There's a button?
Yeah, there's a button.
Did Iron Man live here?
Yeah, basically.
Oh, that's cool.
I mean, you saw this in like the old silent films. It's not, you know,
yeah, they had
cavemen.
They actually had a thing like that at the Oliver House, and they didn't demonstrate it for us, but there was like a drawstring that you used to pull up the basement staircase, which was the most narrow staircase I've ever gone down. Mm-hmm. I don't know how I made it down there with my broad shoulders and massive muscles, but
it's true.
I pulled it off. You know, I do these are the sacrifices I make for the show.
Yeah, for sure.
Into their not haunted basement. Was the basement haunted? No, that one, it was that haunted. One, they have ghost sightings there. Which place am I thinking of that doesn't the base? Oh, your house, the Bridgewater house, the basement, just not haunted. Creepy.
Not haunted. Not haunted. Terrifying.
Forgive me. Oliver House, haunted basement. Rob's house, Bridgewater, not as haunted.
Yeah. It was the most terrifying looking room in the place, but not haunted, or never got any hauntings down there. Although we didn't stay down there too often, right? We were like, we'd walk down and be like, nope, nothing happened, and then go right back upstairs.
Anderson says, Jesse can fit anywhere by dislocating every bone in his body.
It's accurate.
Yeah, that's a Jesse's arms fall out of the socket joke.
Yes.
Really hit home. I'll cry in the bathroom a little later. But I'll wait till the show's over. Okay, so House of Seven Gables, we covered that. Hawthorne Hotel, covered that. What's the other locations here? There's a few locations that Philip English haunts, right, Dave?
Yeah, so Philip English had 14 properties in Salem at one point, and he haunts a lot of them where he used to where they used to stand, basically.
You should have lied to us and said 13 instead, just because it's a creepier number.
Yeah, I know.
So he owned 13 properties around Salem. That's crazy.
Yeah, 13. That's crazy. Very unlucky number. So unlucky that he bought a 14th. But yeah, so one of the locations that is where an old one used to be is Why Not's Gifts. It's a gift shop. It's basically a toy store that sells Harry Potter paraphernalia. And that place has poltergeist activity in the basement. There's always things flying around down there. And that was the one where the owner, Tim, mentioned that he had his employees. They heard a voice come through the speaker one night that just said, "I see you." What was it? "I see you.
I watch you.
So, which is a very creepy thing too.
That is one of the creepiest things you could say through a speaker.
Yeah, it's actually terrifying. And I think it was Matthew Thomas that had the idea, like, well, that's a great shirt idea. And I was like, yeah, that is a great shirt idea. And then I'm like, you know what? It's probably not a great shirt idea if you're walking around with a shirt that says.
Yeah, you know, you show up at the playground with your kids. All the other parents leave with their kids. You're like, why did they all leave? I don't think they like my shirt.
I see you. I watch you. Yeah, I don't think that would fly too well. But it is.
Say the Great came in with the first positive comments about Dave today, saying, tell Dave his beard be looking clean.
You know what, Zay? Get out.
Your kind comments are not welcome here. We roast Dave here. This is Hometown Roast Stories.
I'm just kidding. I appreciate it. I appreciate the one positive comment by the way today. It's nice.
But Philip English, what happens when Dave gets a comment, a compliment? His entire camera breaks because it doesn't know what to do.
This just isn't part of the normal stuff.
Yeah.
Try it again, Dave. It looks like you're back, kind of.
Yeah. I was just saying that Philip English was a pretty wild dude, how he had all of his property confiscated by Sheriff Corwin. And basically, in order to get it back, he waited for Sheriff Corwin to die and then stole his body and held it captive, basically for ransom. So you get your body back when I get my property back. And he got his property back.
I can't wait to do that to you. Can't wait to steal your dead body.
That is just a power move right there. I love
it. It's amazing. Kate, if you're in the chat, please tell me how much you're going to pay for Dave's dead body when I steal it.
Just set the ransom high.
Yes. So like the one problem with a place like this is unless you're actually like work there, you're really not going to be able to investigate it for the most part, because how are you going to get in to do so? You know what I mean?
Did you ever see The Inside Job with Clive Owen, Denzel Washington, where it's like a bank heist movie and basically they go in to the customer and then they hide in the store and they hide inside the walls and then they wait for everyone to leave and they come out and they rob the bank. So that's how we got to investigate this place.
All right. We're going to be sure to cut this part out so that they don't know that we're going to do that.
Well, it worked out because Dave did a fine job of cutting himself out.
Right.
So we only heard half the plan. The rest of the half, we'll text each other. It'll be a secret.
Yeah. Who knows? Yeah. Who knows?
Yeah.
So the funny thing is like everything goes back to the witch trials for the most part, right? All of these hauntings, we find a way to bring them back to something that either pieces of property from the people, you know, the apple orchard with the apple scents in the hotel, English owning all these properties, almost everything ties back to the witch trials.
Right. And I mean, Salem's such an old city that there are other locations around Salem that are legitimately haunted and as it should be. There's so many just older locations there that were built before or after the witch trials that are easily haunted as well. So let's touch on a few more because we touched on the main ones that we went over in the episode, but there are other very popular haunted locations in Salem. I think we start with Burying Point Cemetery. So this is one of the more haunted cemeteries in Salem. Mm-hmm. And there are...
Not only is it one of the most haunted cemeteries in Salem, it is the oldest cemetery in Salem and the second oldest cemetery in the country.
That is true. So I believe Nathaniel Hawthorne. Is Nathaniel Hawthorne buried there?
No, but I think John Hawthorne is.
Well, Nathaniel Hawthorne is apparently supposed to haunt the cemetery. It's one of the locations where he haunts.
He's buried in another city, though. Like, maybe for some reason he is, but John Hawthorne is the one that actually haunts the cemetery. There.
Okay.
And is buried there, yeah. So, I don't know.
Okay, actually, you know what the affiliation is? Is some of his characters' names and homages are carved into some of the gravestones at that cemetery. So forgive me, I think I was wrong about that. I don't think his ghost actually haunts that, but we don't make the rules. Maybe it does.
You're just trying to finesse Nathaniel Hawthorne.
They work just a little bit, right? So they've captured a bunch of photos that have like mysterious shadows, lights that don't make sense. They've gotten plenty of orbs, white mists, and full-blooded apparitions at Old Burying Point. So there's plenty of evidence that have been caught. There is a ghostly lady in white, so check that box that has been seen. And I believe there's also a ghost in blue. I don't see that one on this list that I'm looking at right now, but I think I've heard of that one as well. So that is there's plenty of hauntings that happen at Old Burying Point Cemetery.
So did you see the quote from Nathaniel Hawthorne that they believe is about Old Burying Point Cemetery?
No.
I'll read it. It goes, "There is a fatality, a feeling so irresistible and inevitable that it has the force of doom, which almost invariably compels human beings to linger around and haunt, ghost-like, the spot where some great and marked event has given the color for their lifetime. And still the more irresistibly, the darker the tinge that saddens it." So they believe that was about Old Burying Point Cemetery.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Another one is the Old Salem Jail. So this jail was basically abandoned in the early 90s, but there's ghost sightings that have become very regular. Flickering lights, they have... So flickering lights is important in this one because there is no electricity. So if you're seeing flickering lights, then that is something to take note of. They've also heard screams at like all hours. It's not just like a nighttime haunting. They hear screaming during the day as well. And so plenty of ghost sightings there. They say that this is one of the locations that Giles Corey, is it Giles or Giles?
Giles.
Is it Giles? I've heard a lot of people pronounce it Giles, but Giles Corey.
Giles Corey.
This is one of the locations that he is supposed to haunt.
Mm-hmm.
There's also other possible ones are the Boston Strangler. So that's someone who apparently haunts the other one. There's also 13 Strangler's victims that were stabbed to death. Sorry, I should have made footnotes on this here one. And then there's also Civil War spirits that apparently haunt the jail. So it's apparently a very, very haunted location. That is the Old Salem Jail, where I believe there are now apartments in its place.
Yes. Yeah. I did read that was one of the things that they built all over the top of where it used to be.
Mm-hmm. The Joshua Ward House is also supposed to be haunted. And then Rockefeller's, we've gone to Rockefeller's quite a few times. That building is supposed to be haunted as well. And we had interviewed one of the bartenders that worked there, who is also a warlock. And he had a bunch of ghost stories, not only about like sightings and noises and stuff, but the taps would turn on. So that's kind of become a more frequent one that we've heard about, especially at bars, obviously, or places that have beer taps. But that would happen. And then he had another one about a glass that had completely flown off one of the shelves and smashed.
Yeah.
Excuse me. So there that one.
There's also a haunted restaurant, and I meant to write this one down. I'm kind of doing this on the fly a little bit.
It was like the pig something.
I think that's what it is now. Yeah. It used to be 45. Oh, my God. What's the name of that cemetery that we went to, Dave?
Howard Street.
Yeah, I think it's 45 Howard is what is the address. And there's a lot of stories about that place as well, where people have seen women walking up a staircase and heard stuff in the basement as well. The basement in Salem is like not the place to be. Seems like everyone is like haunting basements in Salem.
Right. So that apparently there is a blue lady at Rockefeller's. So I might have been wrong about the location of blue lady, or there's another lady in blue. So different than a lady in white. So wearing a blue dress instead, but apparently that's one person that haunts Rockefeller as well as a black suited minister. And there are stories that are behind it. You can hear the stories on the ghost tours. We had heard them as well. I don't know how much of it is legend, how much of it is actual fact, but there are plenty of stories all around Salem, and Rockefeller is one of those locations that we have been to quite a few times.
The Ropes Mansion is one that we should probably talk about because it's a big one. And I got some notes on it. I'll try and get through them. Guys, just let me know if my connection craps out and I will shut up. But so the Ropes Mansion is haunted allegedly by the ghost of Nathaniel Ropes, who was... he was a loyalist back in the 1700s, so he was not a popular guy. He got smallpox, and then all the town people showed up around his house, not because he had smallpox, because he was a loyalist, and they just started throwing rocks and sticks at his house, basically, until he died, which he did the next day. So they assume that he died from the smallpox, but it happened to also happen.
You're cutting out now, so didn't die from the rocks and sticks, but he was 47 when he died. He had smallpox. At the time of the attack, he succumbed to the disease the following day. So yeah, it looks like he died from that. And it's uncertain if the mob caused his death. So it could be one way or the other, I guess.
Right. And so people say his ghost haunts that place. And there's a team of investigators that say they got a picture of him, but nobody can actually find the picture they claim they got. Basically, it was just him in a chair and all you can see is his hands, which is pretty creepy. Also, it's haunted by...
kind of cutting out there. What were you saying? It's haunted by
the ghost of his daughter Abigail. They called her Nabby, and she was not very nice to the servants. She would scream and yell and throw temper tantrums, and then one day she was doing something near the fireplace and her dress caught on fire and she burned up pretty bad. She was screaming, but nobody responded to her screams because it was just her being normal. That's what she would do all the time. So,
apparently anytime that they're doing like renovations and stuff, these fires can break out here. It's like a common thing at this place. They say that Abigail, the ghost of Abigail, could be causing it anytime there's remodeling. There was a fire in 2009 that was attributed to the ghost. And, they think this is her retaliating for being set on fire. So that is, I don't know who attributed, I'm assuming it's just like local legend attributes it to the ghost. I don't think the fire department showed up and be like, the cause is ghost.
Yeah. I want to just update what I was talking about with that restaurant. It's 43 Church Street and it's currently Turner's Seafood. And they also believe that this was part of the location where Bridget Bishop's apple orchards were. So they believe that this was built on top of that. And again, they've seen apparitions walking around up a staircase. There's been things that have flown around in the place as well. Mm-hmm. Did not see anything about the smell of apples on this particular one. But actually, I take that back. They do smell the apples in here as well.
Oh, so, look at that. Two apple hauntings in one episode.
Apple hauntings.
Yeah. Gallows Hill is supposed to be haunted as well. We touched on Gallows Hill a bit last episode. It turns out it's not the location where the witches were hanged, but it's still supposed to be haunted by spirits of Salem. So they've kind of updated the hauntings at Gallows Hill. I will say, like we said last week, we walked that hill and it was it definitely had a eerie vibe to it. Old Town
Hall. It is funny to go back and see the stuff on Gallows Hill, like if you watch History Channel stuff, because they are all like adamant about how that's where the hangings happened. And now that we found that it was at Proctor's Ledge, like it really makes some of that stuff look dated, but they were going off the information they had at the time.
That's what they had at the time, exactly. So yeah. The Salem Inn is supposed to be haunted as well. And then Bunghole Liquors, which has quite the name, but place is also supposed to be haunted. We went into there and we asked the staff if it was haunted, and it turns out we got a new employee who said, I don't know, but some employees here think it is. So it used to be a prohibition.
I hope you're scared from that story.
It's just, I'm giving you, I'm a straight shooter. All right. We went there to find out the information. Investigative journalists, while buying beer, we asked if the place was haunted. These are the extra steps we go to for you folks. You know?
I wish that the people that are listening to this on the podcast could see how angry Dave is right now, because he can't talk, because every time he does, he just cuts out. He's just giving the angriest face of all time.
Yes, I don't even think he's listening to us anymore.
He's not. He just hates us so much. Look at how angry he is looking now.
So employees at Bunghole Liquors have mentioned seeing strange women go into the bar and disappear shortly after. One particular account describes how one of these employees accidentally bumped into a woman. At a second glance, he realized that there was no one there and the woman just vanished. So this is from Ghost City Tours. That's where we're getting that story from. But yeah, Bunghole Liquors is apparently haunted. I think that there is like a basement bar to this place. Maybe I think the history on it was like it was a prohibition style pub or whatever. And I think they had that in the basement. But right now, if you go in there, obviously it's just a really small liquor store. I think there's a few of them, but there's one right in downtown.
Yeah. Is there anything else we wanted to hit on in Salem? I mean, we could do a part three, part four at some point on Salem if we want.
There's also the bookstore as well, Wicked Good Books, that's supposed to be haunted, and the ghost of the Grimshaw House, which I think that one might have gotten torn down. I might be wrong about that, but don't quote me on that. But Wicked Good Books, that's right on Essex Street with all the other places, right near Rockefeller's or Rockefeller's. So if you go over there, then you can head into Wicked Good Books, which recently seemed to have cleaned up the place. Before, you would go and it looked like something. If you were claustrophobic, I would not recommend it, but it looks like they have updated and
cleared up a lot of the books. I don't know how you would have gone in before, to be completely honest. That was wild. That was like the wildest thing I've ever seen in my life for a store.
Yeah, it was very, very tight quarters.
Dave, do you have anything else on the Ropes Mansion you want to try to get through real quick?
No.
Okay, that was finally clear.
Dave's his future at Hometown Ghost Stories is one word answers to all of our questions. So that'll pretty much do it. This is a good one. So this is Salem Part 2. Happy Halloween, everybody. I mean, we'll be back for some side content and everything. And then I think on Halloween, we're probably going to try to go live with a horror movie review, maybe. I don't know if it's going to be live
Game or strange. We're going to talk about it. We're going to figure out what we're going to do on Halloween itself. I want to thank everybody that's in chat. I also want to thank everybody that joined the live get together before the show.
It was a lot of fun.
It was, you know, every other Tuesday, generally we do a live get together where we all talk with the Patreon members that can join that week. And they tell us some of their ghost stories. We talk about some of the locations. We make fun of Dave. It's a lot of fun. Everyone should join for that. And it is our 1 year. Like we said earlier, we started this show. We started this show October 30th of 2021. And we have consistently done an episode every Tuesday, you know, since the first week, which is baffling to think of.
It's been a hell of a ride. I want to give a shout out to our patrons. We have our VIPs, Jimmy H, Justin T, Lisa J, Mom and Pops, Wilkins, Stephen V, and Demon King. Thank you guys for that. Other patrons, we have Jake V, Mike B, Stephanie A, Sydney B, Sarah, Dave Loves Bacon R, Kiralee J, Anthony, Angry Dave Rocks T, Brandon W, Captain McSlugs, Cody G, Matthew T, Mariah M, Papa Squatch, Rachel B, Sarah W, Soph M, Hooper, and Mark M. Thank you guys for joining on Patreon for as little as $3 a month. You can get your name on this list as well and join us on Patreon. You get some bonus content, exclusive stuff, and everything. Kate says we're going to do picklebacks for Halloween, so expect no content if that happens because that's what happens when we do pickleback shots. But it was a fun one. Love Salem. If you haven't been there, make sure you make a trip.
We do have our merch store open as well. As you can see, Dave has on our hoodie. I have the V-neck on that I specifically made just for myself, but it is quite comfy. The hoodie I actually like the best out of everything. So I was worried about the quality because we were using a vendor for it, and it actually is pretty great. We have a couple reviews to read as well. The first one is from Mouth. The title is Scary, Weird, and Funny. I love listening to the podcast. I listen at work, and sometimes I'm so into the podcast, my coworkers will tap me on my shoulders and scare the blank out of me. Where in California would you recommend to go for someone's first haunted place, house, or tour? And I know, Dave, you were looking into some places. But
I'd say probably the Whaley House.
The Whaley House is a good one. The Winchester House. The problem is California is so big that I don't really know which part you're in. You could do the Winchester House as well, would be one that I would say. And the other one is from a retired Coast Guard. His title is Retired Coastie in Minnesota. I recently retired from the U.S. Coast Guard and currently live in Pine City, Minnesota. I've worked in places you have been talking about, brings back memories from Salem to Newport to Long Island. Just started listening last week and love the show. Keep up the great work. Thank you. Thank you for checking us out.
Welcome in.
Yeah. And I think that's
so those are the reviews. If you want to get your review read on the show, then just drop us a 5-star review on Apple iTunes. If you listen elsewhere, just leave us a 5-star there. And then, I don't know, send us a message with what you think about the show or an email, hometownghoststories@gmail.com. Join the Discord. I think our Discord link is expired, so I will update that for you guys. But that'll be in the show notes. And then, so thanks to everyone who hung out in live chat. You guys were fun today and always keep the show going and adds a whole different element to the show. So, yeah. Anything else, gentlemen?
That's it for me.
What do we got going on Friday?
We have something coming out.
We do.
Yes.
We have, it will be the Cursed Possession of the Ouija board episode will be on Friday. It might be live.
For everybody? For everybody? Or is that a Patreon only? Okay.
Nope, this will be everyone on Friday.
Okay.
Might be live. We'll see. Might not be live. We'll let you know.
All right. Well. I think that'll pretty much do it. Thank you to all to everybody who tuned in and everybody who listens and everyone on Patreon. We'll catch you guys on Friday. Ouija boards. Later.
Murder in America is a true crime podcast that covers stories from all 50 states, including stories of mass shootings, serial killers, and lesser-known murders. Do you find yourself doing more research after listening to a true crime show? Well, Courtney and I used to do the same thing, and that's why we created Murder in America. Our podcast dives deep into each case. Our storytelling will make you feel like you're right there within the case with us, watching it all play out, and we do not shy away from the graphic details. If you're a fan of true crime, then listen to Murder in America on Spotify now.